You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome into a Wednesday edition, forgot what day of the week it was, of the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News and editor-in-chief over at 8.9 Seconds. And there was a basketball game today. We got Hicks versus Knicks back in action. I want to talk about that because I don't know why I enjoy talking about the Knicks so much when they only have one player I actually enjoy talking about, but I do enjoy talking about the Knicks. I'm going to talk about the Knicks. I'm going to do two segments, one where I talk about what I think the Knicks will try to do and what they're doing well, and one where I talk about what the Pacers will do to counter those things and be successful themselves. And the last segment of this show, I hope Adam listens because I know he wants to talk about this too, but I'm going to talk about the shot selection thing that people have been talking about on Twitter. The Pacers have a very frustrating to some shot selection. I'm okay with the word frustrating, although I'm not as frustrated as others, but I will explain at the end. But let's jump right into section one. I want to talk about the New York Knicks and how this game might look for them on Wednesday. The answer is not great. The Knicks were 1-5 when I started recording yesterday. They smoked the Nets since then, so they're 2-5 now. And that got their defense up to 17th. Their offense is still 22nd. They're one of the slower teams at 22nd as well. And the Pacers are very slow also. So do not be 30th. They're still last in the league in pace. So do not be surprised to see a slower paced game. That's just how the Pacers operate. They try to get 5-on-5 more. They take longer possessions. And against a not good defensive team, they might take their time to make sure they get the best shot. But what's going on for the Knicks? We talked about injuries. Emmanuel Mudiay, who was hurt, recovered and played in that Nets game. But Courtney Lee still day-to-day with a neck injury. Kevin Knox and Kristaps Porzingis, obviously, both out, which is a shame because those are the two guys with the most intrigue. And Lee is a big deal, not because he's from Indy, although I was going to say mostly because he's from Indy, but not because he's from Indy, even though that would make me want to talk about him more than most opponents. Love talking about Indy dudes. Shout out to Courtney Lee, Pike High School graduate. But Lee is just one of their best players, and maybe with Porzingis out, their best player when healthy. He's a really good defender. I would almost guess for sure he gets traded this year. My official guess would be the Thunder, so mark that down for those of you listening. Because he can shoot it pretty well, he can handle it. He's just okay at a lot of stuff. He's not really bad at anything, and those kind of dudes are valuable, especially on the wing. And without him, the Knicks' wing defense is horrible. I mean, just atrocious. They're giving up the one of the worst 3-point percentages in the league, 38.1%, because they don't have good wing defense. They close out poorly. They lose their guys off ball, and it leads to easy opportunities for the opponents. Damian Dotson's getting big minutes for this Knicks team. He's starting now, 29 minutes a game, and he's been playing pretty well, actually, scoring decently, averaging over 6 rebounds a game and over 13 points. That's pretty good for a wing. He might be starting at the 4, I'm not actually sure. I believe he is because they're going with 3 guards. That's less impressive for the rebounds, but not related. Anyway, he's not great defending out on the wing if he has to do anything. Frank Ntilikina is playing the 2/3, and there's that clip that Chris Herring retweeted of Ntilikina playing good defense on Kevin Durant. That's great. Ntilikina is a pretty good defender for his age, but he's not a consistently good defender. And I think they're going to put Ntilikina on Oladipo if he starts, and he will start. I believe that they will demote Trey Burke to the bench if Courtney Lee is healthy. But Tim Hardaway Jr., atrocious defender also, and Trey Burke, if he starts, atrocious defender also. So three guys between Dotson, Hardaway, and Burke, who are just, you can go right at them, and they'll be guarding potentially the Thad, Oladipo, and Collison trio, which is a tough trio to guard. I mean, they can do anything through Thad. He's shown that time and time again. He can screen, he can rebound, he can cut, he finally made a 3 against the Blazers, so I'll talk more about that in our segment, though. In the Pacers segment, I said our segment, like Locked On Pacers Hour, because I was going to have a guest for this, but then I decided not to because I am bad at planning. But anyway, during the Pacers segment, I'll talk more about that specific matchup. But yeah, so poor wing defense will be a way for the Pacers to get open threes. They love the open three. Terry Stotts, before the Blazers game, talked about how much the Pacers love the open three. That's going to be something the Knicks are really probably going to focus on, is trying to chase the Pacers off the three-point line. Not a bad strategy. It worked pretty well for the Blazers and Bucks. But I'm not sure they'll be able to do it with their personnel. So TBD on how that goes down. I'm not sure what they're going to do there. Their big leg up on the Pacers, Enes Kanter, great rebounder. Up to 12 a game now after that Nets game. 15 points as well. I really like Enes Kanter. He's a very efficient player too. He's making 93% of his free throws this year, which is awesome. That means his true shooting percentage has to be very high, and I would like to know what it is. 60. Only 60. Okay, so I guess he's not scoring as well from the field as usual. Anyway, Kanter's an efficient guy who can rebound really well, and he's a big bully in the post. He's an awful, awful, awful pick-and-roll defender, and I'll talk about that with Miles later and Sabonis, but keeping him off the glass and keeping him involved on D is what teams try to do to make him ineffective. The Knicks try to paint him out into the basket, a lot of drop coverage, to make him not have to defend the pick and roll as much. Meanwhile, he's a good screener. He can shoot it a little bit, so he can be anywhere on offense and be effective. And then on their bench, IU grad Noah Vonleh playing very well this year. Worked out a ton this summer, pulled the Oladipo, work out a bunch and become better than you ever have been in your fifth year. Setting good screens, playing all right defense, rebounding really well. I think he has the second most rebounds on the team. That is correct. 8.3 a game for Vonleh, who's not that tall for his position, at least if I recall correctly from watching him in college. Hezonja, who was pretty hyped up just because it's Hezonja, he's a top five pick, and maybe the Magic killed him, has not shot well from the outside, has done okay in a lot of other areas, though, so he could be threatening if he gets going, but he might not get going. Lance Thomas, one of their better wing defenders, but one of their only veterans as well, not scoring well this year. Mitchell Robinson, the freak center athlete they have off the bench, might play too. He's really quick and versatile for a big, but he's a rookie, so he has a lot of lapses that rookies have. And I'm not sure if you'll see any of Moutier, Luke Kornet, or Ron Baker, so I won't even talk about them. Alonzo Trier. I skipped right over Alonzo Trier, this undrafted dude who is just making all these storylines because it turns out he's a pretty good basketball player. He had a great preseason. He's also like Kanter in that free throws are keeping him afloat in terms of efficiency because he can get to the rim. So he's a pretty dangerous jolt off the bench, but I'm not super worried about anyone on the Knicks because without Porzingis, it's harder for them to generate shots outside of Tim Hardaway, who can create his own shot. You know, they have to create their shots within the sets, and if you're ready for anything, you can defend this Knicks team pretty easily. Just get through their set, make them throw it to Hardaway, and be ready for him to shoot. He's not a bad passer. He's just not necessarily the most willing passer either. So I think they can contain him pretty well. Trey Burke really, really transformed when he came to the Knicks. He was a non-factor with both the Wizards and the Jazz, but became good at the end of last year. I think he had a 40-point game. It might not have been quite 40, but it was a lot. So he could be good. He can really get going if you don't guard him very well. So be on the lookout for him too, but if he doesn't start and he'll be going into second unit with Corey Joseph, that will be different for him. So they really have a lot of weapons, and I think they're going to try to, you know, keep Kanter around the basket, keep Mitchell Robinson when he's in around the basket defensively, and kind of funnel guys to the outside for tougher wing shots. And at the same time, I think their guards are going to never switch. They don't have very many like-sized dudes outside of Ntilikina and Hardaway, so you know, I think they're going to try to keep the ball in front of them and force guys away from the basket, obviously. And, you know, hope that the drop coverage and free safety centers can save the day here. Defensively, offensively, they're going to, you know, run through their guards, just who their creators are. A lot of stuff with Kanter as a screener, a lot of off-ball stuff that doesn't really seem that effective because they have younger dudes who don't realize the value of that necessarily yet. But they have some guys who are good off-ball. So, you know, I think, you know, this is one of those games we could probably get away with more ball watching. But, yeah, we'll see how creative they can get with their sets with a new coach. But I think they're going to run a lot of stuff through their guards, you know, try to get shots out on the perimeter. But I don't know too much about their scheme under their new coach. I have only watched them one time, so just be on the lookout for a lot of Tim Hardaway. Basically, his usage is like 30% still. if I'm correct, yes, over 30 now. And Hazonia's off the bench is almost 30% as well. So they really like to go through those guys. And Cantor and Burke have the next tier of usage for them. So those guys are who they like to create through as well. So a lot of Tim Hardaway, a lot of Trey Burke, and a lot of screens from Enes Kanter. But now I'm going to pivot and talk about how the Pacers are going to try to play this team to beat them. So stay tuned after this break. So I talked about a lot of the Knicks wings who are better offensively than defensively. If Courtney Lee does not play, then Vic could have a hell of a game. Tim Hardaway can't really guard him. Ntilikina might be able to, but that'll free up literally everybody else. And I would think they'd put Ntilikina on Bojan Bogdanovic personally, but I could be wrong about that. And also, Trey Burke can't guard. He won't guard Vic, but he can't guard really anybody. He's just too small. So could be a huge Vic game, especially in Madison Square Garden and on national TV, trying to put his name back on the map. I would not be surprised at all to see that from him. And Kanter is the other thing. The counter for Kanter, I like that. The counter for Enes Kanter is screen, screen, screen. Use his man as the screener. Make Kanter move and work. Miles and Sabonis are going to just be setting a million screens this game, making Kanter move. If he comes up too high, there'll be easy lanes to the rim because he's not great at recovering. If he stays too low, I mean, the Pacers have taken a ton of mid-rangers, but you just go at Kanter, roll towards the basket, have Miles rolling more in this game seems like something the Pacers will definitely do. So they can have two guys coming at him and make him make decisions. And maybe he figures it out under the basket, but if they have two guys coming at him, it's always a safe bet going 2-on-1 if you set a good screen. But between Vic and good screens, you can just pummel a team if you need to. They'll probably start a set with something for Bojan like they have been all year. There's a reason he's been such an effective scorer. If the Knicks defend it well, they'll just hop right into some pick action, I believe. And maybe you'll see a healthy dose of Collison again. Lillard is a bad defender, and he was able to get going in that game. Trey Burke is a worse defender than Lillard. So they might let Collison do a bit with the ball, try to get some of that mid-range shot that was falling for him. I hate that shot, but if it's falling, it's fine, whatever. I'm not going to be the one to tell you, when you're hot or not hot to shoot or not shoot. But yeah, DC could have a good game here too. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes for them. The bench, which I keep every time I talk about an opponent, I say the bench is the key because they're so much better. And then they have games like the Blazers where they're clearly not better, even though I feel like on paper they have the better squad. This time again, they're going against a ton of young dudes as well as Lance Thomas. Trier, for all he has been to be as exciting and stuff, he's not a good defender. Same with Hazonia. excuse me. So Tyreek will be guarded by one of those two guys, almost certainly. I'm sure they'll run everything through him, and it'll be great because Corey Joseph can contain Trier and his drives to the basket. Meanwhile, Lance Thomas is a pretty good wing defender. McDermott might not get as many shots as he would like, or I would like. but they'll try to figure something out there. That's always a tougher one. But yeah, young bench versus the Pacers veteran bench that's deep, I feel like, is a big advantage here. I gotta find a better way to say that so it doesn't sound so good. Mitchell Robinson is gonna be doing circles trying to keep up with Sabonis moving around, and Sabonis is passing. So I look forward to how the bench plays in this one. I think they have a good shot to really showcase their why I think they're such a good bench. But overall, this one is really go at Kanter, go at their weak wing defenders. I would not be surprised if Bojan operates as a pick and roll ball handler a few times in this game. Just whoever the worst defender is guarding and Kanter, pick and roll, pick and pop, do something, make them move. You'll create an open shot that way. And also they need to focus on that ball movement. I really enjoyed talking to McMillan about that after the Blazers game because he talked about, I'll talk about this in my upcoming segment, but he talked about making sure the ball keeps moving, reversals, things like that, that make the defense move so you don't settle for bad shots. They had a ton of passes against the Spurs and Cavs. They did not have many against Minnesota and Portland. I do not think it's a coincidence which games they won in that series. So keep the ball moving. Attack Kanter, attack Kanter, attack Kanter. And just the bench, keep them afloat. I think they'll have no trouble. I think they're going to win. That'll be their second road win in a row, a third road win in a row, excuse me, which is super nice. So good to see the Hicks beat the Knicks. I hate that the Hicks thing, but You know, I love rhyming anecdotes, but I hate calling Indiana people hicks, so I'm just going to use it because my affinity for rhyming anecdotes wins out. But one more break here before we move on to the next section, which I'm going to talk about that shot selection. And I guess maybe this is the wrong thing to say ahead of time, but, you know, I think people are too frustrated. So you can come hear my take about bad shot selection. All right, guys, for this break, I would like to talk about my bookie. The truth is, a lot of people don't know how to win with sports betting, including myself. But if you think you know, you have to check out my bookie. Remember that what you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with, and that is what my bookie's claim to fame is. It's your best bet this season to make money betting on sports. They've been in the business for years. They have great reviews online. They have a nice mobile site, which I like. You know, it's not like other ones where it's crappy and looks like their actual Safari version. So you can go get some easy cash there if you would like to go today. I would recommend it myself. And you can win, and they always pay out. You know, it's not like other ones where you might have to wait. Or, you know, what was the lawsuit with the guy who got the wrong odds and they wouldn't pay him and stuff? You know, my bookie's going to pay. They're great. They have in-game live betting too, which is awesome. So look out for stuff like that. They have a lot of fun stuff to do. And, of course, I would not be telling you about them if I couldn't help you out. Join my bookie now, and they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKED space ON, to activate that offer. Visit my bookie today. That's my bookie, BOOKIE. Don't forget the promo code LOCKEDON. You play, you win, you get paid. They'll match their deposit 100% up to $1,000. Now, let's talk about the Pacers shot selection. So here's the stat that gets thrown around, and rightfully so, is the Pacers are last in three-point attempt rate, except that's not actually true. Whoever tweeted that and it got circled the wagons, that's false. They're 28th. They're ahead of the Spurs and Cavs. I think 26% of their shots are threes, which is fine. I'm not that, you know, I'd like it to be higher, and I will stress that opinion momentarily. But I don't think that's necessarily bad, like a lot of people do. They are first in three-point percentage at 43%. That number will not last. They'll have another game like that Heat game last year where they literally don't make one, probably. It just is what it is. It's how statistics work. It's not gonna. You don't see linear growth. That's another thing I wanted to talk about on the show I considered, but I didn't. But I'll do a little two-sentence blurb about it. People are expecting this team to improve, but improvement doesn't happen linearly where, like, every single game you see a tiny bit of improvement off the last game. Like, it happens in a wave. You know, you kind of roller coaster your way through it, but you're going up the whole time. Anyway, their three-point shooting has been very good despite taking few attempts, and that is killing people. If you're on Twitter, you have seen everybody tweeting about it, which I think it's a problem in this sense. And this is how McMillan described it too. When it's the Portland and Milwaukee game, which is where this was the most obvious, it's not that they were taking the mid-range shots instead of threes or attacking the rim. It's that they were settling for the mid-range shots. You know, they'd come around to screen with 18 on the shot clock and bomb along two. You know, that's a bad shot because of the time on the shot clock. You know, you have 18 seconds to find a better look than the shot you're taking. You know, they would run in transition and then pull out of the attack and try to reset, but on their way out, they'd realize they have an open look and take a bad shot. You know, stuff like that is settling. That is what the defense wants you to do. They drop their big, they rush out to the three-point line to prevent the pop, and then all of a sudden you have a wide open mid-ranger, but maybe you take your time and you'll get a better shot out of it. And that's what McMillan talked about. Don't settle. You know, those games they were passing more, it wasn't just that they were making, like, more passes to the open guy. It's that they were reversing it when they didn't like the mid-ranger. They had guys coming off of screens on the weak side. That makes the defense scramble, and even, you know, even if your defensive system is okay, we're gonna protect the basket and the 3-point line as best as we can. You know, if the ball's reversed and you're jumbled, sometimes you forget your scheme. You got to stop the ball. That's the number one defensive rule, no matter what your scheme is. So, extra passes create these extra opportunities, and the Pacers not settling, I think, is way more important than necessarily just we need more threes and at the rim shots now. I do think more threes is better. I don't think the Pacers have the personnel to do what the Bucks or I don't know what the Warriors' three-point attempt rate is, but your idea of what the Warriors do, what the Rockets did, they don't have that, like, we can chuck every possession a three-pointer personnel. I don't think that's right. You know, I think that their threat from the mid-range can often be one of their assets as an offense, and that, you know, if they do run the play right and they have the defense scrambling and they get this open mid-range look, that's a good shot for this team. They have a lot of good mid-range shooters. They are good at creating space for themselves. I'm okay with that. That shot, it's really fine. It really made them good last year. They led the league in shooting percentage from that range. It's just the ones when they settle that are bad. So they really need to find a way to make sure it's a focus to keep the ball moving at all times and make sure that you're not settling for that first open mid-range shot you get. Down the stretch of the Blazers game, you saw it with Oladipo. And I hate to criticize him because he does so much, but he's not absolved from criticism when he is, you know, the possession starts, Miles sets a screen, he comes around it, he turns, and he shoots. And they didn't even try to do anything else. I mean, maybe a little bit of that part of the game is on McMillan to, like, not run an action before that. But, I mean, there's still something to it of, like, take your time, see if you can get something better. And then if there's 10 on the shot clock, then run that or, you know, make that your shot. Even if you're hitting, it's still not the greatest to settle. So that's what it's about for me. It's not about shooting more from here, shooting more less from here. It's about not settling. It's about taking the right shot, not the first open shot. And I think that McMillan's going to drill that into their heads. The starting five seems to be better about this than the bench. But, you know, once to be, and I think that's because they played together last year. They understand all the passing angles and things like that. But once you start to mix and match players and you lose the sharing is caring attitude the starters have, and all of a sudden it becomes your turn, my turn, and like, I haven't got the ball for a while, so when I get it, I'm going to shoot. Stuff like that is so bad. You can't have that. That just won't work for this team. So they need to drill it in the new guys' heads. They need to drill it in the bench's heads a little more. Keep the ball moving. That way the mix and match lineups can still be effective, and this team can still be, you know, shooting the right shots. And that is my take on the shots. I think that is what will keep them afloat. And maybe you think I'm stupid, and I think the analytics wave is the best way to go, shoot a ton of threes, but this team's personnel is not built for the Chuck like Houston or Milwaukee or whoever. But that's all I wanted to say about that. I hope that makes sense. I kind of wrote about that I'm going to promote some of my own stuff here. I wrote about that and something I came out, three key stats for the Pacers this season. It was about the three-point attempt rate. I also had a blurb about Turner and Sabonis' minutes together and the Pacers' defense being very good. I also wrote something for B-Ball Index about that 12-0 run the Minnesota Timberwolves had. You should check that out because I spent a lot of time on it. I went play-by-play for all of the Minnesota buckets during that run and analyzed, you know, what went wrong for the Pacers, how can they make sure they don't let something like this happen again in the future. There's pictures, there's video, there's stats, there's talent grades. It's really cool. So check that out too. But thank you guys for listening today. We'll be back. Adam will be back tomorrow to recap the Knicks game, the spooky Knicks game on Halloween. Ooh. But I hope everybody enjoys their Halloween tonight. Be safe. Have fun with your kids if you have kids. And that's all. Have a great rest of your day.